This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, open year-round. Learn more at bbg.org. This week, Meat and Three is taking you to market and all over the world, from Newfoundland to Tunisia.
Well, a lot of us think of, you know, the British Empire trading things like spices and sugar and silk, but you write that it actually began with salt cod from Newfoundland.
There was a port closure in Tunisia, which was horrible. I mean, it was months, boats just sitting on the water waiting to go, and they couldn't go anywhere.
And we'll learn about how markets have changed, whether because of their customers or the climate.
A few years ago, something around 10 years, it was totally different.
It almost manifests itself to almost smelling like an old fire pit. When you, when you put it out, it has that sort of charcoal-y smell to it. It's not good for wine.
Join us this week on Meat and Three for our global market tour. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here at Beer Sessions Radio. We're in studio. It's in July 2019, and we're recording a special episode that you'll be airing in August of 2019. And there's a little backstory on this. As many of you know, I love German beer, and more and more I love seeing traditional styles that are being made with craft and care. And I feel like the number of brewers around the world are really doing the right thing. Through our friends at Shelton Brothers, we have met an exciting brewer who has a science background from Berlin, and she's going to introduce herself, and that's what our show is going to be about today.
Hello, I'm Ulrike. I'm owner and brewer and everything from Schneeeule Brewery in Berlin. And this, by the way, the first, the only one real Berliner Weisse brewery in the world.
No, and that's amazing, and we're going to talk so much about that, sour beers and beer traditions and everything. And our good buddy from Shelton Brothers.
Hey, it's just Joel here. I'm not as special as Ulrike, but I look good on the radio.
Well, we got a nice show. We might have Pete Langle from KCBC joining us as well. Joel, a little backstory. How did you, Shelton Brothers again, around the world, always finding these specialty craft brewers. How did you find Schneeeule?
Well, Jimmy,
Schneeeule is the image.
It's the weirdest. We should say something about that word because Americans have trouble because there's three E's in a row, which is not unusual in Germany, but in America, we don't do that, right? Schneeeule. It means snow owl. Schnee is snow and Eule is owl. And they just put it together and there you have Schneeeule. I was introduced to the beer by...
Is that a CBD product?
It could be in the future. That gives her an idea.
Schneeeule.
My brother Dan invested in this. He's a co-sponsor of a festival called MASH in Barcelona, where we're pretty active. We import a lot of beers from Barcelona. So a couple of our partners there, Edge and Garage, or Garage, as they say, they're British guys, they asked us to co-sponsor it last year. So we did that. MASH Fest in Barcelona in October 2018 was our first version of it that we were involved in. While I was there, of course, when you go to Europe to a festival, you're going to run into people from around the world asking you to try stuff because people come to us a lot. You know, are you interested in this? You want to do this? Because we're always interested in everything. And this guy, Stefan...
Kruger,
I keep forgetting these crazy names. Stefan Kruger, who is from Berlin and friends with Uli, brought us some bottles of Schneeeule. So in the middle of this crazy fest in Barcelona, we were trying to focus on trying these very low-alcohol Berliner Weisses. So we couldn't get too much information from that, but we were, of course, right away interested. And the more we read about it, the more interested we were because it's a real Berliner Weiss brewery. And, of course, those kind of things interest us greatly.
So let's go back. So, Ulrike, tell us how you got started. I know you had a microbiology background, a science background. Why did you start making beer?
I studied beer, brewing technology in Berlin. And in the industrial style, first 5 years, and it was a bit boring. Then I saw developed the craft beer scene in Germany, and one time I had the real Berliner Weisse in a party and drank this night a lot of it. And I thought, hey, the perfect beer. So I just fall in love with this beer. It has low alcohol, is delicious, and next day is no hangover. And it's traditional in Berlin. So I couldn't understand why it's not, of course, you are a brewer in Berlin, you have to do Berliner Weisse.
I've had some really good Berliner Weissers. I think earlier Joel and I were talking. I mean, the modern version of Berliner Weisse was kind of distorted. So back in the time of Napoleon, 1807, in Germany, this was the style of beer, wasn't it? Maybe there were 200 breweries making Berliner Weisse. It was called a champagne of the north.
That's it.
In English writing.
It's a bottle fermentation, usually, also in this time. And so it can develop the nice mousse, yeah? It's not just a foam, it's a mousse. So high carbonation and little bubbles. Make the mousse on the tongue. That's special. So it just works in a bottle. But also have a nice taste. It's not that strong, yeah. Little bit sour. So some Weisses here, so just kettle sours, are too sour. And also, okay, the big Kindelweisse from Berlin is also too sour.
Berliner Kindle being the brand that people know about from the 90s.
Yeah.
I think it's disappeared now?
No.
Oh, it's still there.
But we don't know.
It was the one that survived.
This is the one where you have the images in like Michael Jackson's books of like a goblet of this Berliner Weisse with different colored syrups that might be used to sweeten it. Because it was just crappy sour.
It is, and boring.
And you put sweet syrups in.
And boring, yeah. And it's it comes from the 70s, so the children of the 70s have it in their head. Hey, yeah, Berliner Weisse for us, for the children. Low alcohol, green and red. And that's a tradition. So, but it's not true. But Berliner Weisse is much older. And 150 years ago, it wasn't sweetened. So just adults put in the evening maybe a booze inside, so liquor or a Kümmelschnaps to be drunk at least. Well, so because they drank it the whole day, and when you drink it the whole day, then first it's not that sour. Yeah, you can't drink two of them in a day. And also, you don't get drunk in the evening when you drink the whole day.
I mean, it's definitely refreshing. And Pete Langle from KCBC just joined us. Pete, thanks for coming over, man.
Thanks for having me.
We love that KCBC is so close to Roberta's Pizza over here.
It's hot out, I'll tell you that much.
But I would jump you up to speed, but I think that you probably have a lot to say about sourness and dryness in beer, along the lines of what Ulrich is saying, just how refreshing it is, but maybe some of the science behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're doing kind of a cheap American take on the Berliner Weisse, mostly with our kettle sours, which I know is a four-letter word for a traditional Berliner Weisse brewery.
It is today, Pete.
So we're just souring with lactic culture, two different strains. We take it down to about 3.2 pH, and I'm looking at TA these days. And then we kind of balance that out with fruit. So we get an additional souring from the acidity of the fruit, and sometimes a malolactic fermentation on that. But the perceived sweetness of the fruit tends to kind of balance the sourness, much like in a regular beer where the hops are balancing the sweetness of the residual dextrins. So we kind of fruit most of ours, and that's kind of maybe why the syrups were happening as well. It makes it a more approachable beer at a very low pH of 3.2. We also do a lot of mixed fermentations in oak, so we're doing more of a natural souring that way, but the majority of the beers that we've been putting out are kettle sours, and I'm really interested to try these natural. You're souring these off the grain.
What?
You're getting the acidification from the malt.
Yes.
Yeah, the traditional sour mash.
Of course. Yeah. I never bought lactic acid bacteria.
Yeah, and then you're doing a re-fermentation with with Brettanomyces.
Also, okay, you have to have it in Berliner Weisse. Yeah. My professor, Professor Medner, from TU Berlin.
Technical University.
Yeah. He was the professor in the brewing technology, and he had made his PhD about Berliner Weisse, and he found out that you have to have Brettanomyces inside, else it's not the same development of the taste, and the characteristic is different. So it's like, I don't know.
Just not authentic.
No, yeah. Definitely not. So if you know champagne, then you know it's a natural sparkling.
Yeah.
Then you have a wine-like aroma, and you can get it just with kettle sours. That's not possible. You have to have a wild yeast.
And inside. Bottle conditioning.
So we know a little about this. You can read, Justin Kennedy, our producer, wrote an article earlier this year in Punch Drink about your beers, Schnee Öle. Mm-hmm. And also, if you can translate the German, Hopfenhelden in Germany wrote about you as well. So there's a lot of information out there. We want you to talk more about this traditional method. So you're saying you're souring the grain, the mash, and you're working with Brett. And the whole room, let's talk about why that's important. Because I think Pete was onto something. I think that there's a lot of sours out there. I think a lot of people get confused about what sours are. And I think a lot of people like to drink sours. But I think that they also want to know, like, what are the traditional sour beers like this Berliner Weisse that we should be drinking? So who wants to start with, what is this method?
I'm not going to talk about the method like these two are, because I'm not a brewer whatsoever. And in fact, one of Uli's emails to a brewer that she collabed with in the U.S. was so confusing to me that I was tempted to write back and say, are you guys messing with me? Because I have no idea what you're talking about. Why don't you just make a lager? So I won't get into that. I'll just get into the whole thing. Why I love German beer so much is that they have their old techniques that existed for whatever reasons hundreds of years ago. The goal being always balance and good flavor, whatever the style was, whether it was lager, which was maybe on the sweeter side, or Berliner Weisse, which obviously wasn't just on the sweeter side. So the techniques that worked in the old days, for me, are always more tasty. They were painstaking, as Ulrich will mention later. They took time to do it and took, the Brett and all these things, and it took more time. And inevitably, you'll end up having versions where you do it quicker, and that's what happens with every style, and it's happened here in America. And I think people now are getting more interested in, really going back and seeing what it is rather than just sort of getting the fringes of the flavor of it. I think Pete would agree with that. Not everyone's capable of doing it with the technology. That's what's the problem, I think, in some ways. It's sort of the same thing that happened with cask condition and maybe later real lagering and that kind of thing, and now Berliner Weisse and Goza and that kind of thing. So I, that's as technical as I will get.
Absolutely. Like, there is, as small businesses and craft, there's a financial pressure to put beer out, as, you know, turn the tanks as fast as you can. But there's a shortcoming in the beer. There's a difference when you make it the old way. You take your time. Like a lambic beer is a 3-year beer. We're doing those as well, and most craft breweries these days have barrel programs, and we're doing all these alongside our regular production. But there is a difference, and I really appreciate what you're doing here, and you can taste the difference in the glass right now. It's delicious.
Cheers, pros.
Thank you.
So Ulrika, tell us about the first beer. So we're going to taste through all your beers, and that's another reason why Pete's here. You guys can talk about taste and flavor profiles.
We tried the Malena. This is an original Berliner Weisse, so without shishi, no aromas, just Berliner Weisse, yeah? That's the beer. So
it's the standard. It's the standard Berliner Weisse without
it's
frills.
It's the standard, yeah, that's it. You taste it's not that sour. You can drink it. It's easy drinkable. So, now it's a bit cloudy because I shaked it the whole time in my time here in US. Usually it's now a half a year old, so it's almost clear. So, and then you can see how it is without the yeast and with the yeast.
And that's so tell me about your brewery. So it's
the brewery.
Describe it to me. It's in a busy place.
My brewery is really small. I'm the only person work there. Sometimes I have helpers, and my husband did all the paperwork and marketing, guerrilla internet marketing stuff, and he is a big organizer of the travel. And I just do the art of brewing, more or less. And yeah, so
it's very small. You're in a factory.
We have a small room in Borsigwerke. This is in Berlin Tegel in the north. It's a huge industrial area. They produce their huge pressure tanks for petrochemistry. And then I brew, and I have 100 square meters in this area. And it's more or less the toilet there. I looked for a room not that big, maybe with drain on the floor, with water, and a toilet without toilets, by the way, is it's the best place for that.
Yeah. And so, do you brew your base beer, or do you buy the base beer from somewhere else?
I buy the wort. Someone produced my wort, so how I want it, and then I transport it to this 100 square meter area, and then the magic going on. You know, with the lactobacteria, with saccharomyces, brettanomyces, and of course a lot of physical work, because I have no machines, so everything is craft work, so handwerk. So everything I have to do by myself. So filling line is not so choo 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 choo. It needs time. I have to touch the bottle minimum 10 times. In the process, so
you hand bottle.
I hand bottle. I close it by hand. I flush it, of course, before with water, and then it stays. The full bottle stays then in pellets also in the lager and for ripening.
Ripening.
Conditioning.
Ripening for conditioning. Yeah, thank you.
I like ripening. That's awesome.
This is good.
So,
and then Pete, what's your take on that, Pete? Sorry.
I like
them. Imagine that, having your, getting your mash and the steps she's doing.
Very, very labor intensive, but it's for the love of the product. And what is your batch size? Like,
my batch size in the moment is 20 hectoliters.
20 hectoliters? Oh, it's pretty big, actually.
The batch is pretty big.
Yeah.
But at least I have to work with it. Mm-hmm. And it's not that much, that often that I order 20 hex.
Yeah.
So twice a month.
Our brew house is 18 hectoliter, which we turn 2 to 3 times to fill the tanks, but You're not much smaller than us.
Smaller. Of course, it's smaller.
Not much, though. It's pretty good size.
But you brew maybe each day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're constantly.
So, and not twice a month.
No.
So that's a different.
Your annual production is much smaller.
In the moment, I look for bigger space, because these 2 times brewing in a month, then the lager is full. And so I need more space for storing, and also for a labeling machine and maybe a filler, a better one, mechanical.
You don't want me to do your labels by hand anymore?
Yes, that's it. Oh, I brought some, by the way.
You brought some labels?
Some labels, yeah, here.
We have to do some labeling now?
Yeah, we're gonna do labeling, right?
You can label it, yeah.
Anybody got a bottle?
This is called Urka's Craft Kitchen.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. When I have guests, for example, the brewer of August Schell. So I know him from the VLB. He studied there, brewing technology. He visited my little space. And in this time, it was labeling on the date. So on the... And we sit there and talked and labeled bottles.
It's fun. That's like craft kitchen. Joel, how's the reception? Tell us about the rollout. You're here in New York. You've been in the States.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting because the beer's only been in the U.S. for 2 weeks or so. The shipment came over in June at some point. It's July now. It came over just because these guys were coming to visit for 3 weeks, and they're just finishing their tour today of 3 weeks. They've collabed in different places and put on a few tap events. And as far as I can tell, everybody loves it, which is appropriate. I think Americans may not be sort of making the exact same thing that they're making there, but I think Americans have good palates. They recognize a really good beer when they try it. And I think it's going to do well. I mean, it's hard, you know, importing is harder now with so many good brewers like Pete, you know, messing with our business. But, you know, of course, we support the local thing. I'm just making a joke. But it gets harder and harder with the import. But this is going to do well because it's unique. Yeah, and that's the point.
Yeah. Let's pop the next beer, Joel. And then...
you don't want me to talk anymore?
I'm going
to
ask her now. Ulrika, so tell us some of the American brewers that you've met, collaborated with.
Yeah, I met a lot of really nice, friendly, and passion brewers. Here in New York, we did collaboration with a little brewery called Strong Rope.
Strong Rope, yes.
And I think Fifth Hammer is a little bit more famous. So Strong Rope, my husband met in Bergen, in Ölfest in Bergen. It's a special beer fest in Norway. And we made an IPA with Strong Rope. So because I have to learn it, how to do it right. Because the Germans make in the moment these old style IPA, so too sweet, not enough
hops.
And that's a little bit of a problem, so I want to do it right when I make a blend with this style and sour.
Do an IPA sour blend.
Yeah.
Wow. Pete, do you know anything you want to say? You're just happy to be here.
And
I'm actually going to Berlin in a couple of weeks and doing a couple collabs, and both of them want to make hazy IPA.
Of course.
I was hoping we could make a lager or Berliner Weisse or something, but it's definitely a thing.
What,
over
a lager
there.
Berliner Weisse?
No, a lager or a Berliner Weisse.
Ah, or. Because it's bottom fermented.
But you see,
makes sense.
Your focus has been Berliner Weisse.
Yeah, and wild breaded sour stuff.
Tell us some of the traditions that are important to you. Is it important to give extra time to this? The things that you really care about that make your Berliner Weisse so unique and authentic.
I wanted to do like 150 years ago or 200 years ago. Okay, it's not that possible because we have, of course, different equipment. Yeah, much more efficient equipment in the moment. And but the Berliner Weisse brewers just brewed young beer, and then they sold it to the so-called Bierverleger. And today, the Bierverleger work was bottling and selling to the bars and stuff like that. And all this work made the breweries today. And but the original Berliner Weisse was relatively young when the drinkers can drink it. So, and they saw how it develops with the time. So it was possible to go in a bar to order a Berliner Weisse, and then you get a young Weisse, or you want a stronger one, then you ordered a Märzenweisse, or you want a Weisse vom Brett. Don't meet Brett on a Mises like today. It was a Brett of a shelf. So it's a wooden shelf, and you could order it, I don't know, till 7 years old Berliner Weisse. So it f- from time to time, from it is a development like in wine. So you don't drink a really young wine. Okay, it's possible. Yeah, we call it Sauser in Germany. So you get fast drunk, or so it's a refreshing also more than old wine. And like with Berliner Weisse, so the young Weisse is refreshing, have sweetness from the young beer, from the wort, still, and then it gets more and more drier till half a year. Then it's the Brettanomyces flavor comes out a little bit. So, and in after a year, it's... Yeah, like in wine, it gets more sweet again. So I would say it's glycol. And then, yeah, it develops like wine too. So I have highs and downs in the taste.
I'm going to let you talk a lot, don't worry. But what do you guys think that the market is for sour beers? I mean, people want to buy sours. But to me, the flavor profiles are all over the place.
Sours are definitely a big seller for us. And our barrel-aged sours even more so. It might be possibly more of a niche market, but we move them quite fast. And I think the fruited kettle sours are actually very approachable for all kinds of drinkers. And I'd say second to IPA, they're one of our biggest sellers for sure.
The fruit edition makes them more accessible, I assume, right? Because we were talking before about how a basic sour beer might not be that interesting for people, but when they add the fruit, then especially in the U.S., it makes it more approachable for people that don't even like beer, for example.
Yeah, and the color, too, is kind of...
The color, yeah.
...draws you in. But, yeah, they're more maybe drinkable for someone that's not so into beer or comes from the wine background or something, or maybe like a cider drinker that's into funky Bass ciders and whatnot. They kind of cross boundaries, and the alcohol tends to be, on the ones that we do, much lower as well, so...
So you can't...
Lower with the fruit?
When we add the fruit, we're doing a puree. So we're adding some water, and adding fruit at the same time. So the re-fermentation of the fruit is about net zero as far as alcohol, because we're also diluting the beer.
Okay, because usually the fruit also would ferment it.
Yeah, we're fermenting the fruit.
And which fruits do you use?
We're using guava, strawberry, lime, all kinds of fruits, berry, stone fruit, and lots of berries.
Okay. So for me, it's brewing a process of saving edible stuff, or better, you use no edible stuff. So all these products are relatively cheap today, but usually you can also eat it.
Our fruit is very good quality fruit. It's
I said it so. In further time, it was like, so the fruits, the stuff you need for the people, for eating, you don't brew with. Mm-hmm. So that's...
So it's like the ugly fruit, the fruit that you would throw away.
Fruit you can't eat
bruised
like that.
Fruit.
So, yeah. And I think that makes more sense. And also, I think the beer is also an art of fermentation. So, and wine is also an art of fermentation. When you use fruits, then it's a kind of wine. And then it needs a bit like wine fermentation art. Also with the fruits. And when I do a fruit beer, it needs time. So 1 year minimum.
So when we fruit our barrel-aged beers, they're on fruit, whole fruit, skin. We're doing two different kinds of beers here.
Yeah.
And we
quick,
do the
quick
same.
Quick beer for, and...
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The other day I was at Grow NYC, which is Green Markets, is trying to get more fruit growers to pair with brewers. And Jesse from Interboro was there, Jason from Strong Rope, but also Anthony Accardi from Transmitter. And he was talking along your lines, Ulrika. He said, I'd like to start using fruit, but I don't have the space because I need the time. And he's an old-style brewer. He wants to to incorporate that fruit and take time with it. I don't quite understand why that's the case. Pete, do you want to tell me a little more about the science?
It depends on what your end goal is for the beer, what you're trying to create here. And fruits are being used in many different ways. A lot of people are heavily fruiting IPAs right now. We've done some fruited IPAs. And this is because it's fun and they taste great, and we're not offended by a tradition or something. We're experimenting and having fun with it, and the end product is delicious. If you're doing a traditional fruiting, yeah, you're depending on the fruit, you're probably going to go whole fruit, and it'll be, the skin will actually break down if you put a sour cherry into a barrel and let it sit for a year. It's going to actually digest the cherry, and it'll break it down into a sludge on the bottom. Sometimes you're going to want to macerate the fruit, and you're going to cut it up so you get more contact with the surface area.
Something like a good Cantillon, like a creek or something.
Creek Lambic would be that.
Yeah, and Ulrich, I like this. Every time he's mentioned fruit, you've been laughing. So I want to know, because like, even a few years ago, Sierra Nevada had an IPA with a tropical fruit, or Ballast Point for a long time had a very popular grapefruit IPA. Do you think that's crazy? I'm interested in your... Because you're laughing. It must sound crazy
because
I used to think it was crazy, too.
I drank my first IPA, I think, 13 years ago. So then you can laugh now. We know it much more longer. And for me, what's totally interesting because, oh, wow, what a fruity taste. What is not fruit? It's hops. Oh, interesting. This is the taste of hops. So, and it's a real beer. So it could also brewed like a German Reinheitsgebot. So it's just hops, water, grains, and yeast. So, and now it's the other way around. So they water the nice beer aroma with fruits, with edible fruits, by the way. Okay.
But it sounds
for me it's not art of brewing anymore. It's just make fast money.
Yeah. It sounds
definitely
like
not for the money.
Yeah. Let's change this up. But one thing I will say, it does sound like that you are embracing traditions that you're used to, and it sounds like when Pete goes to Germany, he also wants to learn those traditions, but at the same time probably so many of the brewers in Europe now want to make the IPAs and things that move. Let's just change the subject for a minute. Joel, we are here in New York City. You guys have been all over the place through some of the festivals. I know that Garrett Oliver, Ulrich met Garrett Oliver. You guys have been at Strong Rope. Tell us a little more about this U.S. trip, because she's very unique. I mean, we don't get too many traditional Berliner Weiss brewers coming to New York who are really trained in German brewing.
We never get any. Well, the idea, I think, America has a huge influence on German so-called craft beer. You know, people call craft beer is usually IPA there. But I think it's interesting. This whole discussion is interesting because you have two different sides sort of clashing a little bit, and different values in some ways. And it's so funny to see the German and the American versions. I guess it's funny to me because I'm just sitting here watching the two sides. But everything's valid, obviously. And we like to bring... Sheldon Brothers has always been interested in this so-called authentic thing, which I think Ulrika would stand for that. You know, she would be such a thing, where she's trying to do what, you know, the right way. I'm putting my hands up as in quotes. Similar to Cantillon, maybe, or something, or maybe Tilo from Rittergut's, something like this, which we're really interested in. At this point, I guess I always have to stay in the middle of it, because we also import stuff that's not along those lines. And at this point, we have to do all kinds of things because the market changes. As Pete is saying, he's not doing it. You know, it's not like we're doing it to make big bucks. It's just this the reality of what you do in America now. And stuff can be good, made a quick way in all kinds of ways.
But also I think the American market is probably interested in some of the authentic products.
Yeah, but what I was going to say when I hear them talking is there's always two different things. It's like politics, where you have people going total Trump and people going complete opposite Trump as we speak, right? Every day it gets more and more. And I think there's always these two sides. It's a simplification, but when Ulrika talks about, oh, this is the way, this is a German thing also, I think, if you don't mind me saying that, oh, this is how it's done. And I like that about Germany, and I think Pete does too. We go over there and you say, and people will say, this is the correct way. And some people find, you know, a lot of Americans get bugged because Americans always want to do everything new all the time. But I appreciate both sides, and I'm glad to be in part of both worlds. As an importer, you get to do that. And so you have one side, this is the right way, and fruit shouldn't be used that way. And that's a very German thing. And the American thing is, we can do whatever we want. And they're both valid. And I don't think we ever need to get to a point where this is right or this is wrong or this is good or bad. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in the end, in the end of times. But for us, it's interesting to bring someone like Ulrika over to meet people like Pete and meet other brewers and meet all these customers and see what happens, because it's a really different planet, even though it's still, I mean, the world's getting smaller, but still there's differences, and that's what's really interesting to me.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn featuring spectacular plant displays year-round. Make the most of the last days of summer on Thursday, August 22nd at Brooklyn Botanic Garden's Beer and Bocce Benefit, a one-of-a-kind garden party featuring lawn games, live music, and unlimited beer tastings by some of Brooklyn's top beer makers. Proceeds from the Beer and Bocce Benefit provide essential support for the garden's educational and community programs. Learn more about Brooklyn Botanic Garden at bbg.org.
We don't have too much time. Let's talk about the rest of the beers, and let's make sure we taste them all. So what's this next beer?
This is Irmgard. Irmgard is not a real Berliner Weisse. It's a Berliner Weisse style, because it's not a real beer, by the way, because they have no hops inside. That's also the reason it's quite sour. Instead of hops, we have ginger, a lot of ginger inside. And
yeah, I can smell.
I cooked it with lemon, orange, and pomegranate peels. So, to add a little bit more antioxidative stuff. And it's, of course, have just 3% alcohol, or 3.5. It's have living lactobacillus inside and living yeast. So.
Ulrika, is it true with the Reinheitsgebot in Germany? If you don't,
that's not Reinheitsgebot. It's not a beer,
so it can't be called beer.
No, that's
so
not a beer.
In your other, your Berliner Weisse, can it be called beer? Yeah, what is it called?
It's Berliner Weisse is a bit special. It's sour, so it's also not like Berliner.
But is Berliner Weisse? Can you call that a beer in Germany?
Wouldn't do that. Of course, I pay alcohol tax and beer tax, but I wouldn't call it Berliner Weisse. Wouldn't call it beer. Of course, Berliner Weisse is a beer, but it's a special, traditional, local specialty. What's accidentally drinkable?
I understand. And what it tells about the taxes? I want to just get a little snapshot of Germany. As a brewer, what taxes are you paying?
Yeah, we pay tax for Plato, means relation to alcohol, and hectoliters, volume. So that's okay.
Now it's the next beer. What's the next one? We're gonna taste all these beers.
Oh, we should mention that all of these beers are named after people, the names of people associated with Berlin in some way. Marlena that we had before was from Marlena Dietrich, the famous actress, who was kind of a great patriot in the end, helping anti-Hitler kind of thing.
Then we had the Irmgard.
You mentioned
also
Hitler and Trump today, Joel.
Oh, yeah, two of my favorite people.
Please.
it's a coincidence. But we didn't mention Irmgard, and this is you have to remember.
Irmgard Koen is a poet from the time of Hitler time, and she wrote stories about love between men and women. So, and of course, in Hitler time, it was Entartete Kunst, and they burned their the books. And she wants money from the government because she had no income with it. Of course, wasn't good, and she have to leave Berlin. And but it's really special. So in this time.
And what is this period?
So this one is Kennedy, who you can imagine. Ich bin ein Berliner, or he didn't say it like that. Ich bin ein Berliner.
Yeah, and the Berliner would say Weiße, so wie, you know.
It's a joke for Germans because it sounds like he's saying he's a beer, he's a Weiss beer. People don't realize that unless they're in the beer.
But what's different about the beers? I love the backstories, but
for me, I just noticed the flavors. The Irmgard is much, to me, more sour, a little less drinkable to me than the Kennedy, the one we're having now, the Kennedy, which is my personal favorite. I like a little bit less sourness myself.
This hopped American style, so cold hopped.
There you go. I'm an American.
Kennedy.
Yeah, that's the reason it's I called America Kennedy, because it's an American. So, and I hopped it first with American hops, but it's hard to get fresh American hops in Germany, or for me in this small scales, because I don't need that much. So I don't need 10 kilograms or tons of hops, yeah. And so I switched to German hops, and also it's more regionally, and it fits better to this German beer style. So it's more European fruits, herbal, grassy.
Pine. I just learned something about politics, and I'm going to tell everyone, because someone's going to pick up on this. If you're one of the 20 candidates running for Democratic nomination for president, look back to Kennedy. Obviously, people really liked him. So you don't need to reinvent. You just have somebody on the board. Okay, next one. This flavor is, Pete, when you taste these last two different... the ginger one tastes like ginger. I know that. But yeah, to you, can you tell that one's hoppier than the other and one's more sour? Because they're very subtle.
Yeah, I can detect the sourness, the difference in sours. I'm not sure I'm picking up much of the hops, but I think there's a lot going on in the aroma as well. So... So
it's definitely different to Malina.
It's different for sure.
Yeah, and the difference is the hops. Yeah. And this is Hallertauer Blanc and Kalista.
Ah.
So Hallertauer Blanc is more...
modern hops.
So, modern, that's true. Modern German. This Hallertauer Blanc is like the name sounds, it's like wine, wine-like
aromas.
We've
used both of those hops.
Yeah.
What's the hop, Pete?
Hallertau Blanc and Kalista.
So those are modern German hops.
Yeah. I think they're maybe from Huel. Do you know where they're developed?
Well, it's also funny what Pete knows about Germany. And just a couple years ago, you were on with some Shelton brothers. You were with Gonstaller.
Yeah.
You were with Ethan from Rockaway Brewing. You guys went down there. And I kind of know my picture of Germany is through Shelton brothers and Be United. I know Sebastian Sauer at Freigeist. You know, I know some of the guys in Bamberg, but you're in Berlin. So how many brewers are there now, and what's the potential? Should we go to Berlin for a beer tour? Is there cool stuff there in Berlin, or only you?
There is some cool stuff in Berlin. You have to find it. That's not the bigger ones, I would say. I don't know. Maybe if you like BrewDog, then I would say that's the biggest in the moment in Berlin. So Stone Leaf Berlin. But you will find some nice bars with breweries. So for example, Straßenbräu is really nice. They also have a sour beer program.
So they're a bar that also brews beer.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Vagabund, for example, also made Berliner Weisse. I also like Heidenpeters.
There's a bunch of little brew pubs around. They've been there for a while. A lot of them have been there for a while.
Yeah.
I think Berlin is a real good place for bars and drinking in general. It's just not been considered a beer capital other than Berliner Weisse, which sort of was messed with, and it didn't really exist so much.
yeah.
So,
Pete, you said you're going to Berlin?
Yeah, for Berlin Beer Week, and tagging along with Joel for a tour of Franconia. And we set up some collabs with some Berlin breweries. One's First Weissach. I probably murdered that.
First
Wiercek.
Wiercek, yeah.
Wiercek, so yeah.
We're making an IPA with them and Barrier Brewing. And then we're doing another three-way collaboration with Strassenbräu.
Strassenbräu, I said it, yeah.
And Strassenbräu.
Kraft Zentrum Spandau.
It's Berlo. So, Kraft Zentrum Spandau is the home of Berlo and First Wiercek, by the way.
Ah, so yeah, those. I haven't met any of these guys. So I'm not familiar. These were set up through mutual connections.
By the way, that's near my brewery, and they brew my.
They
world.
Make your work.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Small world, Jimmy.
Yeah, yeah. And brewer,
brought closer together by the Three Stooges, known as the Shelton Brothers.
Especially me.
Since you put that on your website, read about the Shelton Brothers. It says there's a line about there's three Stooges and there's three Shelton Brothers, but.
There's only two and a half Shelton Brothers.
You keep
now.
Me laughing, man. You guys are good. This whole Germany thing is very interesting to me. I, you know, look back at the Michael Jackson books, and for me, the first beers I were drinking, were, you know, Aventinus, you know, Weiss and Doppelbock, and to me, I get German beers. I like different. I like Alt beers. You know, I like Kölsch. Those are beers that I can drink.
You like Kölsch?
I like Kölsch, yeah.
Okay.
She hates Kölsch because she's not from Cologne.
Yeah, nee, I would prefer Altbier, yeah.
So you actually
because
care. You have different styles, regional styles.
Yes.
Not
that much.
But why? Yeah, why do you like Altbier more than Kölsch as a style?
Taste?
Malt, is it malt or?
Malt, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would prefer also Lager than Pilsner.
Do you guys think that next week, by the time this airs in August, a little bit over, but we're doing an event with 12 breweries are making beers with local malts in the U.S., but they've been doing it for a while now. And I'm just curious, in Germany, do you think you pay more attention to the malt? Or do you know more? What do you think, Pete? Do you think the Germans are more hyper aware of their malt, have more access to local malt?
The brewers or the maltsters?
The brewers or the maltsters, I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of those beers are very malt forward. Like many of the lager beers don't have that much hop contribution. English brewers as well are very traditional into malts. Belgian beers, maybe they definitely want a good quality malt and a nice blend, but they're more yeast forward. Americans, we're all into malt as well, but we tend to bury them with hops.
Yeah, but I mean, in Germany, are there more like small maltsters, any new malt traditions, or are you just buying the larger malts that are available? Is there?
I think maybe we have also a more tradition in bread, so our bread seems better than here. Maybe not all of them.
Oh, very diplomatic.
Yeah.
Maybe more awareness of now, yeah, the grains and
the moment. In the moment, a lot grains. Of bakeries also close, so and a lot of industrial stuff popping up and blah blah. That's awful, more or less, at least. I can imagine. Yeah, and also we're remembering also the old varieties of grains. So, for example, Kemka is also a new small brewery made sour beer in Germany. Is a lot of a little bit interested to try something with old barley, for example, and old grains.
Joel, noch ein Kennedy Bier bitte.
Oh.
Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, Ulrika.
Ist da noch ein
perfekt
Kennedy
Deutsch.
Da?
Only
perfect.
Ein bisschen.
Do I have any more Kennedys?
Oh. Da ist noch ein Jasmin, würde ich sagen.
I really love seeing the world of beer and politics through your eyes, Ulrika. Thank you. And I'm glad you're doing a good job of keeping up this. I know you speak English, but I also know that we're probably a little slow today. Maybe it's also early. This is a 1 o'clock show. Joel planned the show like 5 months ago.
That's how
he
I roll.
He kept saying, we're coming in with Ulrika and the Schnee Ulla Brewery, and I kept writing it down, and they were going to be here for like 3 weeks, except they could only come today, July 11th
they're
or
busy,
something.
They're busy.
They're very busy. Yeah. So yeah. Where else did you take them? You were in Strong Rope, but you went to other cities.
Oh, I didn't take them.
I didn't
them
get in. The whole tour.
They where, did their own thing. They were
where else did they go?
They're very sufficient, just like the, you know, self-sufficient. The Germans are very good. They come over and they just get in a car and go nuts. I mean, I've only seen them like, this is only the third time I've seen her in the 3 weeks, because they went to, I mean, they were here for a few days at Schaller and Weber. They had an event, which is unusual, the first night, I think. And then they brewed with some people. Then they went up to Northampton, Mass., where the Dirty Truth, one of the bars that we're kind of close to in Northampton. Then they had a few days hanging out with Kent Falls, our other friends in Connecticut, and they brewed there.
Really nice.
Yeah, and then they brewed in New Jersey. Maryland.
Yeah.
We visited Baltimore afterwards.
Oh, they went to, yeah, they went to, they had friends
in Baltimore. In between, we visited the referent.
Yeah, the referent, yeah.
Yeah, and we did a blend of Woodruff in one of his barrels. So we will see how it works with a traditional Woodruff taste in American fermented beers.
So. Woodruff is one of the flavorings, the syrups they used to use for Berliner Weiss. Yeah, maybe they still do.
Wouldn't be green.
But what is what is the Woodruff flavor? What is it made from?
That's Woodruff.
But
that's
what is Woodruff?
It's a plant. It grows here, by the way. I found it in Kent Falls, in the woods.
Is that legal? She's supposed to be doing that, snooping around our plants here?
She's a brewer. She should know where things come from.
So it's a similar nature here around. So you can.
That's for listeners. Look up what Woodruff is.
In the end of April, beginning of May, when it starts flowering, and then the Germans made the Bohle out of it, so like a punch.
Woodruff, and then you're at Kent Falls. Tell us about that. We know them in Connecticut. So are they actually on a farm?
Yeah, so we prepared a little bit the lactose from malt. We grow the lactose from malt, and then we brewed the Berliner Weisse. So I think it worked. So I have to. I was a little bit surprised that the American brewers add that much stuff to their water. So they have to pre-sour it, so for a sour beer.
I don't understand that. Pete, you want to?
You pre-sour your beer?
Dropping the pH for the health of the lactobacillus better fermentation.
Why they are then healthy? More healthy.
We're also trying to prevent contamination, and I think it's also about this off flavor. TSP, it's called. It's supposed to help limit the production of TSP, which smells like Cheerios.
So you imitate the pH drop of the yeast, Saccharomyces.
Yeah.
It needs one day for dropping pH with Saccharomyces. By the way, with Lactobacillus also. So.
Yeah, we do it for Lactobacillus.
Yeah.
So you learned a lot. So you studied brewing technology, but also microbiology.
Yeah.
I know Pete also has a science background. Do you think that's essential to be a good brewer, is to know science?
No.
No.
No. I think you have to have passion for it. Science and also education could be a little bit a break. Stop, not in this. So maybe more in this direction. So, okay, when you have no idea what you're doing, then start get crazy, and maybe you're lucky or not, and the beer is good or not. but
like my first homebrew.
You don't, yeah, like that.
First and last.
yes.
But you don't need scientific... that much. It helps, of course. to know what you what you're doing.
I would have no idea what they're talking about.
Makes stop you in your creativity.
I'm thinking about Kennedy, so. This is great. I'm going to make a toast to you guys. This has been a great show. This will be airing in August. We're going to have to wrap it up. Pete, it's funny. We started, it's not funny, it's great. We started the show drinking the KCBC margarita.
Lime burrito?
The pizza gate beer here at Roberta's, which is a rice lager. Tell us about that beer. And let's taste one more of your beers. Let's pop a KCBC beer and we're going to have to close out.
So that's, that is a 20% rice. Pilsner, if you will. It's just like our strap hanger beer, 20% rice, and the rest is Pilsner malt, fermented at 50 degrees Fahrenheit, cold lager temperature, and lagered for 6 weeks, hopped with Hallertau Mittelfrüh. A simple beer, but kind of a riff off of Budweiser, which uses, I'm told, 30% rice as an adjunct for them. But we've been making that for 3 years now and trying to just show that rice is not a evil, cheap adjunct. It's actually cost more than our barley. And it's got a nice flavor. It lightens the color and the body of the beer.
And then what's this beer you just brought us now?
This is an alternate take on that. This is Strap Light. So this is smaller starting gravity, same recipe, but smaller starting gravity. And then it's amylased to where all the sugars are converted into fermentable sugars. Like the Brut IPA tradition or a trend that came and kind of went. So this is fermented bone dry, like a light lager. So it's Strap Light.
That's great, Pete. I'm so glad you're right down the street. You're on Jefferson Street stop, L Train, KCBC.
Great place.
Just down the street from Roberta's Pizza. Big shout out, guys. Thanks, everybody. Pete from KCBC. Joel Shelton from Shelton Brothers. Ulrika from, please say your name
Schnee
again. I love this.
Schnee
Euler.
It's easy. It's all easy, right. Jim.
It's easy. And you've got some great imagery, and this show will be up in August. There's some great, the Snow Owl. And thank you so much for coming out, guys. Joel, always, you guys have some great beers, and I'm going to keep having you guys on. So thank you again. Ulrika, this has been great. We could talk for 2 more hours. And but again, check out, there's a great Hopfenhelden, it's a German magazine. There's a great profile of Schnee Euler on that, and also Punch Drink in New York City. There's an article by Justin Kennedy about them too, so you can read more.
And watch me and Pete on Instagram in Franconia.
All right.
And Pete probably will be Instagramming in Berlin before that, so keep an eye on Pete.
Love that. Love the German styles. Thanks again, our producer, Justin Kennedy. Engineer today was Amanda, and we'll be cleaning this up, posting it in August. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.